Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, where you stay up to date in 48 on all things NBA. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside co-host World B, Michael Freer, and this is episode number 22. How was your weekend, World B?
Oh, it was tremendous. Got to watch some really good basketball. Sunday was an amazing day of basketball for the league. I think it really they really did themselves well, you know, in terms of getting attention. It certainly much better than the previous Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought, obviously, the games that were selected for those national TV games that we'll get to in a second were outstanding. But we'll get to that with my first quarter in tonight's show. But for now, let's start off with your opening tip.
Yeah, for those who may have missed it, I don't know where you were because you should have seen it on Monday morning. But Damian Lillard had one of the most amazing games in NBA history on Sunday night, coming up with 71 points in a blowout victory over the Rockets. His numbers were just amazing. Became the eighth player to score 70 or more in a game. He is the first to do it, though, in fewer than 40 minutes on the court. Played only 39 minutes. He's the second player this year to hit 70 points, as Donovan Mitchell did it last month, hit 71 as well. So it was really an impressive outing for Lillard, who I think I test you. I got on his case when he took a DNP rest after first game back coming out of the All-Star break because they got stuck in the snow and all this mess. And I gave him a hard time because I couldn't believe it. You had the whole week off. How could you need a rest? And, boy, he made up for it. He's made everybody forget about that DNP. But, you know, the thing about the Blazers, you know, they need Lillard as much as any team, maybe outside of Jokic, needs the Nuggets need one single player. Because, you know, since he came back, remember he got injured in November, he missed a lot of time. He came back in early December. And since, I think it was December 4th, he came back. And since then, they're the best offense in the league. They're, you know, scoring almost 120 points per 100 possessions. And they need him because their defense stinks. So they need every point they can get. And, you know, last night was just an amazing game by an amazing player.
Absolutely. And it's quite incredible that 71 must be the magic number this year with, as you mentioned, both Mitchell and Dame going ahead and hitting that 71-point mark this year. I'll be honest, World B, I was watching this game as I was working out at home late in the second quarter. I believe Damian Lillard had like 25 points at halftime. And, you know, I was watching the game, and yeah, he was hot. I mean, he was making a few shots here and there, but I turned it off after halftime, just didn't really have much interest in watching much more Rockets ball than that, and just couldn't believe when I checked in on the score late in the third quarter just to see what was going on. And man, Damian was on quite a run there, and what a fantastic performance by him. So salute to Damian Lillard, keeping absolutely those Portland Trailblazers in it somehow.
Absolutely.
As for me, World B, my opening tip comes Friday night. It was the Kings at Clippers game, and let me just set the stage for you here. You know, it's the late game. It's the Sacramento Kings. Those are two of my favorite combinations as far as a game to watch. And then, of course, oh, it's Russell Westbrook's debut in an LA Clippers uniform. I figured we'd probably talk about that on tonight's show, so I needed to be well prepared. So tune into that game, and early on out of the gates, no team could miss. Go to the second quarter, no team could miss. And I tell you what, the defense was there. I mean, was it perfect defense? No. But were there tough shots made late in the shot clock? Yes, and just the entire game, we had both teams just on hot scoring runs. Every ball that was bouncing around the rim that's kind of like a 50-50 ball was going in. Every and one opportunity was made. All free throws were pretty much converted, it seemed like. And let me just tell you a little bit now. Let me just break down just the quarter by quarter of what happened here. At the half, it was 80-76. The Clippers led at home. And then at the end of the third quarter, it was 117-110, which should probably be a normal ending to a game as far as a final score is concerned. And then even on a second night of a back-to-back, the Sacramento Kings didn't really lose any of their energy and continued to fight. And they ended up tying it up at 153 apiece at the end of the fourth quarter with Malik Monk knocking down an ice-cold three-pointer with the game on the line. And right after that, kind of gave us a preview of what was to come this weekend all across basketball. Kawhi Leonard actually at the horn launched a 51-foot three-pointer that almost went in as well. So the ball was just finding the basket that night. And then after the first OT, it was 164 apiece. And then finally, in the second overtime, after 58 minutes of play, the Sacramento Kings out-dueled the Clippers offensively, 176-175. On a second night of a back-to-back, I can't emphasize that enough. And just quite a performance. I mean, Malik Monk led all scorers in this game off the bench with 45 points. Kawhi Leonard, earlier in that second half, caught fire, couldn't miss a shot, even with double teams. He ended with 44. And maybe my favorite stat of the night is the fact that between Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox, they scored a combined 87 points, which is the same amount that the Brooklyn Nets scored that night against the Chicago Bulls. Now, it was an ice-cold game for the Nets, but just truly incredible and kind of puts things into perspective just how good those two were. They scored as much as one NBA team did on that night. So a lot of fun there, and the Sacramento Kings continue to fight to stay atop the Western Conference standings. So that was a lot of fun, and it ended up being the second highest scoring game of all time. So quite the Friday night on my end. Do you have any thoughts on that game?
Well, it was just an amazing performance. As you say, there were shots all over the place. Fourth quarter, Fox was big for Sacramento. They came back multiple times when it looked like the Clippers are going to pull away. It was just a really good night for Sacramento. Like you said, coming off the back-to-back, on the road, and putting up the performance they did, they're becoming one of the teams to pay attention to the rest of the season because their offense is so explosive. They're now the number one team in offense when we were talking about the Celtics for most of the season. Then it was the Nuggets, and all of a sudden, here come the Kings, and then the Kings are now number one in offensive efficiency, I guess 100 billion points in a game will do that for you. So, I mean, but, you know, they've been doing it all year. And we've talked about it over and over. Mike Brown's a defensive coach. They brought him in for defense. They got him from the Warriors, where he was Steve Kerr's top defensive assistant. So, naturally, he has the number one offense. It makes sense.
And you got to give credit to Mike Brown, too. Things got really shaky there at the end of the first half with Domantas Sabonis picking up his fourth foul before halftime. So he really had to kind of juggle that situation very tenderly. Of course, I believe Sabonis didn't foul out until later in the second overtime. So he actually lasted quite a bit out there. But they got some good minutes from Chimezi Metu off the bench. Yeah. He's been a great small ball five for them. And, you know, I have you to thank for this. Whenever Malik Monk has a good game now and I'm watching a Kings game, all I can think about is you saying, wouldn't it be nice if the Lakers had him? They let him walk.
Lakers don't need him.
So thanks for that, Worldby. That's ingrained in my head.
Could have done it without Rob Pelinka.
And with that, let's go ahead and get right into our first quarter because we got a lot of action to go ahead and recap from Sunday. It was a wild Sunday on ABC and ESPN, where we had the Phoenix Suns visiting the Milwaukee Bucks. We had the Los Angeles Lakers in Dallas for a matchup with the Mavericks. And then the late game, we had the LA Clippers facing off with the best in the West in the Denver Nuggets. All were outstanding games. Of course, the one we won't talk about tonight was also a good finish in the Golden State-Minnesota game. But let's go ahead and start off with the finals rematch from 2 years ago, the Phoenix Suns at Milwaukee Bucks. Of course, there was no Giannis, no Durant, but did you get a chance to watch that game, and what were your thoughts coming away from that one?
Yeah, I had a chance to watch the game. It was a really, really good game. It was back and forth. I mean, 14 lead changes, 7 ties. Both teams were without their stars of the moment, with Giannis having to sit out, and then KD still not ready in Phoenix. But it was a really exciting game. Drew Holiday, he's been money for them all year, and it was never more apparent than in this game where he came up with 33 points, a big basket late, had a steal that was huge. I think an unsung key to Milwaukee's 14-game winning streak now, which is, you know, ridiculous, is since Chris Middleton's come back, they've kept him on the bench and had him come off the bench, and it's really worked for them for whatever reason. They you know, you don't mess with a good thing, I guess, but he's really, whether or not he likes that role, he's really been productive in that role, and they really responded to him there. He had a double-double in this game off the bench. They haven't lost yet, obviously, since he came back coming off the bench. So I don't foresee that changing anytime soon. But it was a real fun game. You know, the Suns really could have used that for momentum heading in to, you know, what we know is going to be a wild finish in the West. And you, losing to the Bucks is not a, it's no shame in it, especially the hottest team in the league. But you had that game. It was real within your grasp, and you on the road, you couldn't get it done. That's a, that's one you probably really want to get. And, you know, they played as good as they could. I mean, Booker was solid. Chris Paul was solid. Jay Crowder, big threes in the fourth quarter. So it was a good game, really good game to watch. And, you know, the Bucks are on fire right now. They can't be stopped.
Yeah, and for all those people out there that questioned Drew Holiday maybe being one of the last guys to be named as an all-star this year.
That was me.
I think you got your answer once again on why he was an all-star. I think that really proved to the world, as far as those that maybe don't catch the Bucks if they don't have league pass or just so happen not to watch enough of their national TV games where Giannis has sat. I think that was just a big statement game for Drew Holiday against one of the top teams in the West, especially with what's coming up. I mean, they're not the top now, but you know, they're still one of the more competitive teams in the Western Conference. Definitely give everybody a tough game in the Phoenix Suns. I think what he did in that closing seconds against Devin Booker, he had that big steal. I think that really haunted a lot of Suns fans, because that brought back memories of that iconic steal that led to that alley-oop. But I feel like anytime Drew Holiday steps on the floor against the Phoenix Suns, he just creates nightmares for those guys. I mean, he really has their number in the previous matchups there. I was happy for Jay Crowder. It caught some heat on social media because I did talk about, you know, he got a little sweet revenge, which, you know, we don't have to go into it again, but I thought he got a little bit of a raw deal and kind of how things were communicated and handled and him losing his starting job and not getting a chance to compete for it. So it was cool to see him have some big time threes down the stretch. But, you know, I'll say this on a positive note for the Suns. I think this loss, you know, only speeds up the urgency of getting Kevin Durant on the floor. I was kind of surprised, to be honest, he didn't suit up for this one. I thought for sure we'd see him after the All-Star break. But, you know, they got some help from Denver. We'll talk about that later with them defeating the Clippers. But I'm with you, Will B. You can't just mess around in the Western Conference this year, especially a team like Phoenix that has a great support system with their fans on their home floor. I mean, they need to try to lock up one of these home court advantage spots in the West, and they're not going to be able to do that without Kevin Durant. And that was super apparent down the stretch. I mean, to me, as nice as it is that the Bucks won and kept that winning streak alive, this game was no indicator of who's the better team right now. I mean, in that last 2 minutes, the Bucks did a great job defensively, doubling Devin Booker, over-pressuring Chris Paul. And those are just things you're not going to get away with once Kevin Durant's there. So it didn't really indicate much. Of course, the Bucks didn't have Giannis either, so it goes both ways. But, you know, it was a great game, very entertaining game. But as far as, you know, how those two teams and each respective conferences stack up against one another, without both Giannis and Durant, it's really hard to tell.
I agree. And the Bucks situation is still, you know, the finish up with them. The Bucks situation is still, I don't think it's been resolved, even with Giannis on it. Their offense still is not there. They need to figure it out, because I think there's been one team in the last 20 years to rank outside the top 10 and make the finals or win a championship. And the Bucks aren't there right now. Their defense is becoming the best in the league, or one of. So they're really playing it well on that, and the way we know they have in years past. They got to pick up the offense. They got to find it a way to get some more points and be more productive, because they're just not – I don't think they can win a title as is with their offense where they are.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And one last note before we move on to our second game that we want to highlight from Sunday. Bucks currently on that 14-game win streak. Giannis' rookie year, they won 15 games total. Or I should say we won 15 games total because I was, you know, glad to be a part of that one. Yeah. All right. Well, the second game was probably the most surprising one of the evening on Sunday, and that was the Lakers visiting the Mavericks. And coming out of the gates, Dallas just was red hot. I mean, they were pushing the pace, as we have talked about on previous episodes. They were knocking down threes. Tim Hardaway, I want to say, had 12 to 14 points in the first quarter alone. And the Lakers really didn't have any answers. And, you know, based on prior years, I didn't know what to expect from this team. If they were just going to lay down, accept a loss, that was what they did most of last season. But they ended up showing no quit. They fought back. And I think for Lakers fans, this is a fantastic sign of things changing there, because they showed the urgency and awareness that they didn't have last year. And the two guys I want to give most credit to are the two former Kentucky standouts, and that is Anthony Davis, who was playing back at an MVP level, like we saw him play in the first 20 games of the season. And then the other one, guy I've mentioned a lot on this podcast as well, the newly acquired Jared Vanderbilt. He had an outstanding game. I was surprised at the deadline that, you know, he was just so easily moved. I think he's a legitimate piece for a good team, and he definitely proved that yesterday with his rebounding and energy. Really liked what he brought to the table. What were your takeaways from that Lakers come from behind victory in Dallas?
Well, my takeaways were exactly what you said. They played with a sense of urgency after they got way down. And I'll be honest with you, to backtrack just a little bit, and I didn't think this meant a whole lot at the time and kind of mocked it. But when LeBron James says during the break, I'm gearing up to play, try and play every game the rest of the season, I think that it's subtle. And it turns out he's not going to, because he hurt himself in this game and is ruled out for Tuesday's game against Memphis. But that's legit. He's not doing a wrestling. He's actually hurt. So, but I honestly think that little comment there was a signal to the rest of the team. I'm in it to get us here. I'm not just trying to play out the string. I want to get us to the postseason. I want to get us to the playoffs. And I think they're playing with that. Now, you get down 27, you know, it doesn't look like it, but they made a big comeback. That's the second time this year they come back to win a game down 25 or more. That's really ridiculous.
Yeah.
Last month they did against Portland, and it was really a remarkable comeback. And as much as LeBron James gets all the hype, and deservedly so, he's been the attention guy all year with his chase for the all-time scoring record. This team is going to go where AD goes. If he's on the court and healthy, he is the biggest key for that team's success, because offensively, I don't see it from this team. They haven't really done it all year, but they're getting better defensively, and they're getting better with AD because AD is on the court. They have, since he came back in late January, they have the third best opponent effective field goal percentage behind the Bucks and the Bulls, two of the really good defensive teams this year. And then it's the Lakers. And it's really, he contests every shot he can. He gets all the rebounds. He was 30 and 15 on Sunday night. It was really, really impressive. You think about it, this team missed their first 15 threes. They won the game.
Yep.
They had an effective field goal percentage of like 46%, which is ridiculously low. And they won the game because they really bear down on defense. Kyrie was just awful for the Mavericks down the stretch. He just had a terrible game. And I was the one who was a big fan of the trade. I'll sit up here and say it. And right now they're 1-3 with those two, Luka and Kyrie, in the lineup. So I don't know. They're teetering on the edge of this fall. You know, the wheels falling off the track here. They're getting very close to that, the way the West is. Not over yet, but that was not a good moment for Dallas.
No, especially down the stretch there in the final possession for Dallas. That sidelines out of bounds play looked like there was some miscommunication between Kyrie and Luka as Kyrie was inbounding the ball and turned it over, which was a a pivotal turnover as far as the outcome of this game. And that's the exact type of scenario I'm talking about. That happens in the playoffs and things get real ugly. Easy departure for Kyrie Irving to kind of use that as his cop out. I'm going somewhere else. So, you know, I don't think we'll see it now. You know, I don't think it's now or that particular moment. But if these things start to build up and then something like this happens in a big playoff game, I think that could be the major blow up. And one of the biggest reasons I was a little concerned that this was Mark Cuban's big move was going out to go ahead and get Kyrie Irving to pair up with Luka. But
before Kyrie wants to bolt, you know, he needs to do better than 2 for 10 from 3-point range if he wants to point the finger at somebody else on his way out the door, because he was not good yesterday, not good at all.
Yep, well said there. And before we move on to our last game that we want to talk about for this segment, I wanted to do give some credit to Dennis Schroeder. All right, he didn't have the greatest game from deep. He was 0-for-4. But this is a game the Lakers were without D'Angelo Russell, who had been playing pretty well for the Lakers since coming over. Really, Schroeder's their only point guard on their roster. I mean, you look at their bench, they play Reeves, Brown, Hachimura, Bamba, and Walker. They don't have another ball handler that can kind of assist the team when the ball's not in LeBron's hands. And he did an outstanding job. He ended up leading all Lakers with a plus 17 in the plus-minus department. He came up big, and he's going to have to come up big, as you mentioned, with LeBron James being sidelined for their next game. They're going to need him to not only provide some scoring, but some stability taking care of the basketball and hopefully getting that ball to Anthony Davis. So
I agree.
That should be interesting to follow. And then for our late game last night, just to put the cherry on top to a fun Sunday, we had the Clippers visiting the Denver Nuggets. That was an outstanding game where the Clippers kind of fought their way back and made it interesting. But once again, the best team in the West, the Denver Nuggets, prevailed. And what'd you think of that one?
That was about as fun a game as you could really hope to see, because there were two really good teams. And I think the Clippers, they lost that game. They had a rough weekend. We're going to get into that in a second here.
Yeah.
But they're really playing well with those, with Kyrie or Kawhi and Paul George now healthy or whatever. But they needed to close this month out on a really good note, though, because we mentioned at the beginning of the month there were no back-to-backs for them, for the team, the entire month. So they had a chance for both Kawhi and Paul George to be on the court, and they basically were, except for one night where Kawhi sat out for reasons I still don't understand when they're coming off a rest. And so, now we get into the March and April, and who knows what's going to happen with their load management, injury rest, and all this other silliness. So they really need to come and have a good February, And, the last few games were tough, but what an exciting game. Jokic with another, 23 triple-doubles now, a 40-point triple-double, no less. He's ridiculous. He's getting the help now. He's really gotten the help all year. He just doesn't have a ton of help. There's not a name guy there. They tried to give it up there at the end with a couple of mistakes down the stretch. Jamal Murray kind of fumbled around with the ball late. He didn't have the greatest shooting night, but they're still the team of the West, or the team out West. We're going to talk about them in a little bit. And I know you want me to get this note in, so I'm going to get it in anyway.
You have to.
From Saturday night, or Friday night, to Sunday, the Clippers scored over 300 points, and it went 0-2. That's almost impossible to do. It's not impossible. We found out there were some other teams that had done it, or at least one. But that's unbelievable. To score 300 points in consecutive games total and not win either of them is pretty I don't know if it's demoralizing, because professionals seem to have a unique knack for bouncing back, recovering from these more than fans do. But that, for me, that just was ridiculous. I just couldn't believe that they came away with those two. They're brutal losses. Two games they could have won and really carried momentum into the rest of the year. Now they got, two more losses.
Yeah, and no question about that. And the thing that I'm kind of noticing, having watched both the Clippers games this past weekend in which they lost, You know, they put up good points, as you mentioned there. I think Tyronn Lue has a tough time right now figuring out what his rotation is. And that was clear to me last night as I was texting you throughout the game. I was very passionate about the fact that it seemed like he was giving Eric Gordon a little bit more time than he probably should have. I thought Norman Powell didn't play as much as he should have in that game with what he can provide offensively. And Eric Gordon was kind of a non-factor, played 25 minutes, didn't score a point, was 0-4 from the field, only had two assists. I just didn't see what he was providing out there on the floor, but maybe he's just trying to experiment a little bit with you know, the five-man combo combos on the floor at one time. And then another thing that was apparent too is how much this team misses Zubac. I mean, it was huge to go ahead and get Plumlee at the deadline, but now Zubac's out, and in that fourth quarter late, Plumlee fouled out, and that really hurt them a ton. I mean, they had no answers for who was going to defend Joker. And then if you defended Joker with your biggest man, I guess you could say, you know, they would try to punish you down low with either Porter or Aaron Gordon. So still not sure what I think of the Clippers. They obviously have an extremely deep team full of a laundry list of names. I don't think there's another team in the league that the casual mediocre fan could name more guys than the Clippers have. I mean, you look from top to bottom, I feel like most casual NBA fans know like probably 8 to 9 guys on this roster. And you probably can't say that about other franchises out here, but that only takes you so far. You got to figure out how to get the chemistry out there on the floor. And, you know, some of their other reserves struggled as well. Bones Highland, that was a big game, him returning to Denver. One thing that I did look up, World B, that I did mention to you, want to make sure our listeners hear here. I did some research into why they were so, I guess, open to trading Bones, and it seemed like things really got ugly there this season, so much so that he got in trouble with his teammates over something he did. Maybe he was late for a practice or a shoot-around, something like that. They made Bones Highland fly commercial for a road trip. I've never heard of such a thing happening around the league, but man, talk about a consequence. You must have done something really bad. I mean, typically it's, you know, grab my gear or go get donuts for the team. No, you're flying commercial instead of with the team to our next road game. And he definitely heard the boo birds last night.
That was good. You showed me the article, you sent it to me. I got a kick out of it. It explained a whole lot. We'll put it that way. Puts a little clearer picture. And you know, you mentioned that, you know, the Clippers, their schedule is not getting any easier. That's the problem with all this. You know, they have to go, they host Minnesota coming up on Tuesday. Then they go to Golden State, and then they go to Sacramento in what, you know, should be really fun game here on Friday. And then they get Memphis again. So it's really, you know, those two games that they could have used. Imagine what their season looks like right now with those two wins. And so, you know, first of all, they're in fourth place all of a sudden. Now they're in fifth. But, you know, I'm going to talk about it a little bit later, but the West is so wild. You know, give it a week and it could all change over. Teams in the play-in tournament could be in the playoff field. Teams in the playoff field could be out, you know, in a week. So it's going to be a fun situation in the West. But, yeah, the Clippers really could have used those wins. I'm a big Ty Lue guy, and I think he's trying to figure it all out right now. And I think with the big three, I think eventually they'll get it going. Kawhi's looking really healthy, and he's really hitting his shots. PG-13 is going to be fine, I think. And then it's a matter of if Russ can blend in. And I told you last week, the fact that they play a lot of ISO ball, and Russ is Mr. ISO. So that shouldn't be a problem for him to blend in the rest of the season with that unit.
And Russell Westbrook through two games looks just fine out there to me. Yes. I like him. I think he's an upgrade at point guard for kind of how he fits within that team. With as much ISO ball that they play, I like the fact that he can be standing off ball and kind of catch it, rip and go towards the hoop. He's getting a lot more of those opportunities with this spread out floor with the shooting that Kawhi and PG both have. I've been impressed with him early on with the Clippers. I think he's not trying to do too much, and I don't think he will, knowing that he's got those two side pieces in Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And
this might be his last stop, too.
Yeah, and I think he realizes that. You know, he's really got to do a good job here in order to kind of stick around because things are growing old with him. And as we get into our second quarter here, let's talk a little bit about the Atlanta Hawks shakeup with the coaching. As the report came out, Quinn Snyder gets a 5-year deal with the Atlanta Hawks. I know you've been keeping your eye on the Hawks all year, so I'm curious to get your thoughts on that coaching hire and what you think that might do for the Hawks in the immediate future.
I think the coaching hire is a good one. I'm a Quinn Snyder fan. I think he proved in Utah he's a can be a successful coach. He had the Jazz with the best record a couple of years ago. Had the number one offense 1 year, so he knows how to. He's been around. He knows how to coach. There's plenty of talent on that roster, and now the heat is on the players. It's on Trae Young. It's on Murray. It's on these guys. And to his credit, Trae Young, who has struggled mightily with his shot all season long, back-to-back 34-point games since the firing. So I don't know if he's taking it upon himself to be more assertive or whatever. He's just on a hot streak or it's coincidental. But, 34 back-to-back games after your coach gets fired and the heat comes on you, that's a good way to respond. They're 2-0 in those games. And here's one thing I'll mention about the Hawks. They are the worst team in the league in terms of the lowest percentage of their field goal attempts coming from three-point range. I think like 33%, just a third of their shots are threes. When Quinn Snyder was with Utah, each of the last two seasons, the Jazz were number one in that category. They took highest percentage of their field goal attempts were threes each of the last 2 years. So expect to see that change real quick if past history holds anything. So I would expect a lot more threes from this team, and now you got to make them. Trae Young, like I said, has been one of the worst shooters in the league all year from the perimeter, and now he's got to if he can get going, if Quinn Snyder can figure out a way for him to get his open looks and do all this stuff, they can make it. It's too late to make a real serious contention run, I think, for this team, but they can get in the playoff field.
Yeah, no question about that. And I really like this hire too. I mean, obviously, this isn't a rebuild situation by any means. I think Quinn Snyder is a guy that can really elevate this team immediately, kind of instilling his own direction and guidance on what this team will do offensively and defensively from here on out. And I think he has what it takes to kind of solve this problem they have with their guard play right now. And I expect a high volume of threes as well. And on top of Trae Young trying to get it going from three, another guy that they recently acquired that they need to get going from three is Sadiq Bey. He's had a year that's been quite a struggle from long range. It's actually a contract year, or at least this is his qualifying year, to where if he doesn't get a contract this year, he'll be a restricted free agent next year. He's got to play well in order to look out for himself here. So hopefully they can get him going from long range as well. And I think things are looking up in Atlanta, and I certainly wouldn't count them out as a team that couldn't be a first round scare.
And I'll tell you what, the next 2 weeks for them, they have three games against the Wizards and two against Miami. Now, four of those five games, I think, are on the road. They play back-to-back with Miami. They play back-to-back with Washington. They get Washington at home for one game. But those are huge games for them in that whole play-in tournament field, or if you want to get past them and into the playoff field, those are huge games for Atlanta. Five in the next 2 weeks against those two teams. That's going to tell a big story for their season, I think.
Yep. And for the second part of our second quarter, will be, do you want to kind of explain to everyone your question in regards to the Denver Nuggets and what you have to say about this?
Well, we were texting last night watching the game, and I mentioned to you that it's because of the trading deadline, and they didn't make a big splash trade like some of the other teams. They seem like they're the most under the radar team for a team that's got the best record in the West that I can remember. We just don't take them very seriously as seriously as maybe we should as a legitimate contender. We talk about all these other teams. Can the Warriors get hot and get a run? Will the Suns get, now that KD's going to be there, are they going to suddenly just leapfrog everybody? Oh, and here come the Kings. The Memphis Grizzlies were the team of the moment. We've talked about these teams over and over, and at the end of the day, there's Denver with a 5.5-game lead over everybody in the West. They haven't had a real slump all year. They have one of the top offenses in the league now. I think it's number two after the Kings' weekend was ridiculous. They won 5 out of 6, and look at the teams they've beaten. Some of the teams they've beaten in the last 5 wins: Miami, Dallas, Cleveland, the Clippers. Cleveland was a huge game for them. The Cavs are the best defense the best defense in the league. And Denver put 122 points per 100 possessions on them. They absolutely dominated offensively in Cleveland. That's a big deal for Denver. And it's a real telling sign that this team is not going to. We've talked about them all year, how it's the Joker and really no one else. And the numbers bear that out. We've talked about it. The difference when he's on the court and off the court in offense is ridiculous. And so it's legit. It's a legitimate complainers or concern about not having enough help. But yeah, here they are. Every time we talk about them, we don't really give them their due, I don't think. And I'm partly to blame too. Their defense was one of the worst in the league the first couple of months. They're in the upper half of the league now in defense. They've climbed for a while now, and they continue to climb. I don't see why they can't win the whole thing. We basically gave it to Phoenix when Kevin Durant got traded there. And I'm just saying, I don't think we have to do that just yet, because somebody's going to have to go through Denver to do it.
Yeah, and Denver does such a great job maintaining the pace and flow of a game. I mean, when you got a guy that's the two-time – it's funny, we don't talk about them enough as being a legitimate team, and they have a back-to-back current MVP that – completely controls every basketball game. You can't speed him up. You can't slow him down. He always plays at his own pace. And I feel like the four guys on the floor with him kind of follow his lead in that regard. And the only thing I'll say to be devil's advocate here, and I'm definitely guilty of questioning the Denver Nuggets, is just the fact that, Jamal Murray has had his fair share of injuries. Has he fully recovered? Who knows? Michael Porter has kind of been up and down all season. He had an incredible game last night. I think he had like 28 points, 29 points.
Yeah, he was solid that one last night. Absolutely.
Yeah. But sometimes he's hit or miss. So yep. I think it's more so just like the core two guys around him, being Jamal Murray and Michael Porter, both being kind of guys just coming back from injury and the questions surrounding how much they're going to bring to the table on a night-to-night basis.
Oh, I don't disagree with that at all. I think you're correct. But it's just funny that we don't, I'm looking at it right now. They lost 3 in a row in early December, and that's really it for slumping. Yeah. A couple of times they lost back-to-back games. The last time they lost back-to-back games was in late January. They lost to the Bucks and the 76ers on the road. You lose to those teams back-to-back, that's a slump for them these days. So they just... Yeah. All they do is they just go out and win. They win enough games, and they're separating themselves to the point where even when Durant comes back, they're not going to have enough to catch Denver, at least in the West, for the top seed. So somebody's going to have to go through Denver and beat them. And the thing is, everybody's waiting for Jokic to deliver on getting this team to the finals. I think everybody's apprehensive. It's why some people don't want to give him the third MVP, because – for some reason, they think his postseason success or lack thereof is somehow a requirement for MVP. Well, obviously, it's not. And I think when they make a nice run, and maybe it means a finals appearance, they're not going to get their due as a team. Just in the way that the Jazz during the last few years under Quinn Snyder had some really great teams and could never get out of the West. So I guess there's some. Maybe they fall into that category.
Yeah. And with that, World B, we clearly have nothing Good to say here tonight. Not enough content to discuss on tonight's show. We've reached our halftime buzzer 40 minutes in, and we'll be back with you all for the start of the second half. And we're back with our second half here. Already exhausted from the first half. That was a hard-fought battle talking about having a lot of catching up to do here. But
we covered a lot.
For our third quarter, we want to have some fun honoring our network in Believe with a game of Believe or Disbelieve. So, World B, I know that you have a question lined up for me. I've got a question lined up for you. Let's start with what you got for me.
Yeah, did Jakob Poeltl save the Raptors' season?
Believe or disbelieve that? I'm going to say he did, and here's why. I mean, they were clearly struggling quite a bit. They were a team that were reportedly looking to make a big shakeup at the deadline. Ended up not doing that. They ended up just getting Jakob Poeltl inserted into the lineup as a true five-man, which is something they were missing and certainly didn't trust their other bench options to kind of fill that role. And he seems to be making quite a difference. So I certainly believe that Poeltl has been the difference right now. It's allowed Siakam to shift back to the power forward position. And finally, they're starting to click a little bit out in the East. So I go ahead and hit believe for that. As for you, World B, believe or disbelieve, are the Wizards good enough to stay in the play-in field?
I'm going to say believe on that one. And wow, there's really not a reason to do it the way they're playing these days. But I'm going to still do it anyway. I think their offense is obviously struggling. They had a really bad game over the weekend against the Knicks where they blew a 19-point lead and ended up losing. And then the last game, they got blown out by Chicago. They had their second worst offensive game of the season against the Bulls. But that's not the worst thing in the world, because the Bulls, in case anybody's not aware, suddenly has an incredible defense these days. The last 6 weeks or so, they've been on fire defensively. Well, now they're one of the best defensive teams in the league. So it's not the worst thing in the world. Not impressive for the Wizards, but it's not the worst. But they have a schedule coming down the stretch that gives them opportunities to stay in that field. They had, we mentioned with the Hawks, how they have so many games with the Wizards. Well, guess what? The Wizards have so many games with the Hawks coming up down the stretch. They have 4 games left this season against Atlanta. They have yet to play them. They have 3 more against Toronto. 3, you know, 2 teams that are in that same play-in mix. And so they got, you know, obviously the opportunities there. And I think with Kuzma, I think with Bradley Beal, and I think with KP, they have a big 3. And I personally believe in them.
Bold. That's all, yes, I'm going to say. Bold.
All right. your question number 2 for this, for you, is can Patrick Beverley help the Bulls' playoffs chances?
I'm going to actually believe it as well. I'm going to go on the bold side with you there, World B, and you kind of just touched upon it with their defense improving. Of course, he's not going to make a world of difference as far as their chances for like a title, but as far as improving their record and where they may stand in the Eastern Conference standings, I think he certainly does. I mean, if there's one thing we got to give Pat Beverley credit for, it's his effect on the defensive end of the floor. He adds toughness, he adds communication, and he, from all accounts, he holds guys accountable. And that is something this team needs. Zach LaVine is a guy that's not always bought in on the defensive end. A young guy like Patrick Williams, who's been playing better as of late, is a guy that needs some help and some direction where he should be on the floor defensively in his spots and in his role. And, you know, he at least brings a voice. And through 2 games, there's been quite a Pat Bev effect. They're 2-0 with Pat Beverley inserted onto that roster. So for right now, I'm going to believe that. But for you, the last and final question we have for this segment: can the Heat move up and finish in the top 6 in the East? Believe or disbelieve?
I'm going to say disbelieve. Okay. And they have the talent, but they – well, first things first, the teams that are ahead of them right now are really playing well, with the exception of the Nets. The Nets are up and down. And they could fall. They could actually fall into the play-in field at the rate they're going. But the Knicks don't look like they're going anywhere anytime soon. And then you're not getting past the other four in the East, I don't think, if you're Miami.
No.
Now, I say this, and they go ahead on Monday and put a nice win on the road over Philly. So what do I know, I guess. But, you know, they entered that snap. Monday's win over Philadelphia snapped a four-game losing streak for Miami. And my biggest complaint with them, it's been the same all year. They just can't shoot. I don't know how you go from the number one three-point shooting team a season ago to being down near the bottom. I think they're third worst right now in three-point shooting. And they tried to improve at the deadline and got Kevin Love for his three-point shooting and stuff. So what does he do? His first two games with Miami goes 3-for-13 on threes. I mean, it's just if you can't get it from the guy you traded for, this is a league where you got to shoot, and they can't shoot these days. They can play defense. They held Philly under 100 points tonight, Monday night, excuse me. And so they clearly can still play D. Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches. I just think the teams ahead of them are playing better. And if they do have a shot, it would be if the Nets come back down and Miami's able to get past them. The other five in that six mix, I don't see Miami being better than them.
Yep, I agree with you on that one for sure. I'm disbelief when it comes to the Miami Heat. But that was a little quick, fun segment there. As we get to our fourth quarter, we've got our mailbag, listener-submitted questions. First question comes from Pat, and Pat wants to know, which team has changed your perception of them the most after the trade deadline?
Believe it or not, for me, it's trying not to be as homer as I can, but I believe it's the Knicks. Picking up Josh Hart was it turned out to be really something for this team. They haven't lost since they got him. They won six in a row after their win Monday night over the Celtics, a game that wasn't really that close. He's been a huge pickup for them. They entered Monday just two games behind in the loss column from Cleveland, who is the number four seed in the East. So they have a shot at the rate they're going of actually getting up to that fourth spot, which would mean home court advantage in the first round. Now, the last time they did a couple of years ago, it didn't matter because the Hawks went in there and just blew the doors off them. But this is a different team. I think they're a lot more focused than they were at the start of the year. I think Josh Hart, that rotation now is really set for them. They have a quality starting unit and now a quality bench unit to go in there. And it's going to put pressure on some guys. I'm talking to you, RJ Barrett, to really step up your game if you want to see some time on the court. Tom Thibodeau has already shown so far in the last couple of games he doesn't mind going with Hart down the stretch and having RJ Barrett sit on the bench during crunch time. So, if you want to get want to get on the court, you got to play better. So I think it's going to push some other guys. And I think that they've really opened my eyes during the sense of trading deadline.
I agree. And that'd probably be my top choice for that answer too. But just to have some disparity here, I'm going to go with the Phoenix Suns. We haven't seen it yet, but with Kevin Durant on board, it brings a new excitement, new life to this group that I thought was pretty lost for most of this season. I know they had some big injuries to Devin Booker, Cam Johnson, of course, the unique situation with Jay Crowder. But all that's kind of behind them now. I think, they can certainly move on. It's almost like the Lakers, right? Like the Lakers, it was the LeBron show. It was Russell Westbrook being kind of a distraction, just fairly unfairly of how he was playing on a night-to-night basis. LeBron has the scoring title. It's out of the way now. That's put behind him. Now we're just focused on trying to win as many games and how many games we can be available with AD back healthy. And I think the same thing is going to happen for the Suns. Once Kevin Durant's inserted into that lineup, playing starters minutes, a guy they can count on down the stretch alongside Devin Booker and Chris Paul. I think they have the pieces to really, step the foot on the accelerator and start climbing the rankings in the Western Conference. As much as I like the Sacramento Kings, I'll even go as far to say I think at the end of the season, the Suns will have a better record than the Sacramento Kings, despite what this weekend showed. And I think Kevin Durant's obviously going to be a big part of that. So I think Phoenix just acquiring a superstar in Kevin Durant, which you don't get to do all too often, was the team that changed my perception the most. And I want to thank Pat for that question. Our second question comes in from Rick, and Rick wants to know, are the Wolves going to make the play-in?
I'm going to say yes. And wow. much like with the Wizards answer, there's really nothing to fall back on when it comes to Minnesota. They're ridiculously inconsistent. And part of it's probably because I'm an Anthony Edwards fan, so maybe I'm a little biased there. They went out at the trade deadline and picked up Conley, and hopefully he gets to work out with Rudy Gobert if he can ever get back on the court. He's missed the last couple of games. Hopefully he'll be, get healthy quick. But, they're really inconsistent, so you don't know what you're necessarily going to get. Over their last 15 games, they've beaten teams like the Grizzlies, the Kings, the Warriors, the Nuggets, the Jazz, and the Mavericks. All solid wins. But over those last 15 games, they also have lost to teams like the Wizards, the Hornets, and the Rockets. So, I know, what do you get? You actually lost to the Rockets and beaten the Kings and Grizzlies and Denver? I mean, what team? What do you make of this team? But I think they have enough talent, and I think they're going to be hungry. They've been doing it without Karl-Anthony Towns since, God knows when, preseason maybe? It's been so long. And I think they're going to get it together, and I think they're going to find a way to pull it out and get into playing field.
I think I'm going to go the opposite direction here. I think the Timberwolves are going to fall out of it. I don't think there's enough consistency with this team on what you're getting on a night-to-night basis. I highly question the health of Karl-Anthony Towns as well as Rudy Gobert, of how reliable he is. Maybe this is just me, because the last time I watched a full game of them was against Charlotte, and Charlotte beat them on the road in Minnesota. And that was just kind of just an ugly game that the Hornets ended up out on top of, but just not a disciplined team. Not a big fan of their rotation. Just not much there. I think a team like the Lakers, where that has LeBron James and Anthony Davis, are going to be a team that, can boot them out. And even in Portland, I mean, they got a young competitive squad. And if Damian Lillard is able to continue to kind of single-handedly keep them in ball games with his clutch shooting and down the stretch play, I just don't see Anthony Edwards having what it takes this year to go ahead and carry that full load to maintain that play-in position.
The offense has been a disappointment for them with as much talent as they have. And we talked about the Clippers losing those two games, how bad – that was a bad loss for Minnesota on Sunday to lose to the Warriors when you're up by 12 in the fourth quarter and you got a chance to beat the Warriors are inconsistent. We know that they're fine, but at home they're one of the best teams in the league. And you had a chance to put the hammer down on them in the fourth quarter, and you couldn't, with three starters out for Golden State, and you couldn't get it done. That's I could understand your feeling, anybody else's feeling about not thinking they're going to have enough to do it. So I like the contrarian view from time to time, and I'll take when everything fails, I'll take Minnesota. I think they'll have it just enough. But you're right. They have to go out and prove it, because those losses are bad losses.
Terrible losses. And we want to thank both Pat and Rick for their questions here tonight on tonight's mailbag. And that leads us right into our best bets section. And tonight I want to focus on new uniforms, new odds, a same game parlay X of familiar faces in new places. And that starts with Russell Westbrook with the LA Clippers. Right now, I like him at the sportsbook for 10 points. He's scored 17 in each of his past two games with the Clippers, but certainly can get him for a safe 10 points. I don't think there's going to be a night Russell Westbrook doesn't give himself enough of a shot to score a double figure. So I think that's an easy win right there. Mason Plumlee, right now, Ivica Zubac is out. I like Plumlee for 5 points, five rebounds. He's been extremely active, obviously a big piece to the puzzle with the Clippers not having another big man outside of Zubac and Plumlee. So he's playing heavy minutes right now. He'll continue to have a role.
Line though, right?
not at the free throw line. But hey, if he gets too early ducking, dunks or quick lands or a putback, he only has to make one of those left-handed push shot free throws.
You're right.
To get to that 5 points. Five rebounds is a no-brainer, which you can get right now in the sports books. He's averaged 10 rebounds a game so far with the Clippers through two games, and he's had 7 and 10 points respectfully in those outings. Another guy, former Clipper, Reggie Jackson. Right now, I think the sports books are really disrespecting what he can bring to this Denver rotation off the bench. You can get him as low as 5 points, and you can also get him for 1 3-pointer made. So I like both of those. He's averaging 7.5 points through two games, and he's made 2 triples in each of those games. So go ahead and lock him in for that 5 points and 1 3-pointer made. Of course, the Joker is going to space the floor and find him if he's wide open. And lastly, out in Milwaukee, Jay Crowder. I think it's safe to say you can go ahead and count on him to drill 1 3-pointer in a game. He's made 2 triples in each of his first two games with the Bucks. And so if you combine all those together, you're certainly getting plus odds on the sports book. And those are the guys to keep an eye on as far as new uniforms, new odds.
I like those.
And with that, we're going to get right to our final thoughts, Will B, and we'll go ahead and start with you.
Yeah, my final thought, we've talked about throughout the show, whatever, but I'll get specific. The Western Conference down the stretch is going to be one of the most wild playoff, play-in, whatever races you want to call it, that we've seen in a long, long time. Because you have, out of 15 teams, you have two teams that are battling it out for last, and they're really battling as hard as they can to get that first pick. And then the other 13 teams are all in some sort of legitimate play-in or playoff contention. I mean, the number 4 seed and the number 13 seed, that's 10 teams, are separated by just 3 losses in the loss column. That's a ridiculous small amount for 10 teams to be separated by. And it looks like Denver has a clear shot, unless they really go in the tank, to take the Western Conference and have the number 1 overall seed. And after that, it's really up in the air for all the seeds. And so we're looking at a really fun finish in the NBA season out West. And I know it's out West and a lot of late games, but if you don't stay up late to watch them, at least look on the internet in the morning and see how things turned out, because I don't think you're going to be disappointed.
Couldn't agree more with that statement. Great closing thought there, Will B. As for mine, as a former video coordinator, I am certainly very interested in continuing to monitor coaching rotations. And the three that I'm looking at most closely right now are the Toronto Raptors, with Jakob Poeltl being inserted into the mix. Precious Achiuwa, as I had mentioned on the show, was playing extremely good basketball for that group. But now they threw Poeltl into the mix, and he's starting to really kind of suffer there as far as his production is concerned. So I really want to see if he's able to still kind of find an established role, or if it's going to just be a give or take between Precious Achiuwa and a guy like Chris Boucher, who had a strong game 2 nights ago for the Raptors in that rotation. So we'll continue to see what Nick Nurse does, trying to iron out his set rotation. He's a guy that loves rotations. As we've mentioned, he typically only plays about 8 guys per night, might extend it to 9 between Precious and Boucher, but really curious to see what ends up happening there. My second team is the LA Clippers with Tyronn Lue. Of course, they got Eric Gordon. They also got Mason Plumlee. Let's see what he does with this rotation, starting with Eric Gordon. Obviously, I talked about Norman Powell, who was in the mix for Sixth Man of the Year candidate. Had his minutes suffered just last night against the Denver Nuggets in a pivotal game on the road. And, when Zubac comes back, what's that going to do to Miles Plumlee's minutes? Mason Plumlee's minutes, excuse me. And will someone else take a hit? Will Nick Batum maybe start to take a seat if Gordon likes the ball handling of Eric Gordon and then Norman Powell on the wing? Very curious to see what happens there. And then lastly, the big kahuna and Kevin Durant joining Monty Williams' rotation in Phoenix. Who's going to take the hit there? Is Terrence Ross still going to have a pivotal role as he has thus far, playing about 20 minutes a night? Josh Okogie, as we mentioned, has been playing really strong. I think it's Okogie who's going to somehow survive Kevin Durant joining this unit. But really curious to see what the Suns do with a guy like Terrence Ross and another guy that plays tough defense in Ish Wainwright, who just signed a 2-year extension with the Phoenix Suns. Real curious to see kind of just the chess pieces around the big three in Phoenix and how those will play out with the Suns. And with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back with you on this Friday, and we'll be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.